Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And hello, and we're glad that you've joined us on this edition of News in Focus. We have a great program for you tonight. State Auditor Dave Yost will be joining us in just a few minutes. We're going to talk about some issues on the state side. But first, I'd like to remind you about our upcoming Spring Freedom Banquet of the Ohio Christian Alliance, which will be Thursday, May 25th at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. Our keynote speakers are Bill Fetter from the American Minute and Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy. Of course, this banquet will focus on the D-Day Landing Prayer Act, the legislation that passed Congress in 2014, and now we're in the development phase of the project to add the entire prayer of FDR that he prayed with the nation on the morning of the D-Day landings, and that's the way in which he chose to announce to the nation that the liberation of Europe was underway. This is a project of the Ohio Christian Alliance, and we're working with the Park Service, the U.S. Park Service, and Friends of the World War II Memorial to place the prayer there in Washington. So it's the final plans are being approved in Washington, and then we'll start the construction phase and dedication of June of 2018 to add that wonderful presidential prayer as a lasting tribute to our men and women in uniform who served this country so nobly. So that will be on Thursday, May 25th at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. You can register at our website at ohioca.org or just phone 330-887-1922. Let's turn to our good friend, State Auditor Dave Yost, who's no stranger to this program and has been doing some great work in the auditor's office now for the last 6 years as he is serving his second term. And he has been basically a watchdog over Ohio's finances on various levels. And the program we want to talk about tonight is his effort to do away with fraud in what's called the SNAP program. Auditor, welcome to the program.
Chris, it's good to be back, and it's good to hear your voice, my friend.
Well, thank you, and of course, you know, the folks, those who come to the bank would know that you're multi-talented, that you also, you play piano, you sing, you're a musician. Those who would learn more about you, of the multi-talents of our state auditor, people have always enjoyed you and your wife as you sang at our banquet a couple of times, and she plays violin, and you played piano, and it was very nice, and I think we got some nice comments. In fact, the governor of Kansas, who was with us last year, said it was nice to have an auditor that was multi-talented musically. So just the many things that you do. But let's focus in on tonight on the SNAP program because, you know, first of all, that number stares out at me as I'm looking at this article, $2.5 billion program that actually helps people who are in poverty, helps them with food supplements for their family and obviously children in poverty. But there are people that take advantage of the program and people that commit fraud in the program. Let's talk about that for a few minutes.
Thanks, Chris. And it's something I'm passionate about because, you know, in America, nobody should go hungry. Any of us can hit a bad patch of the road, and particularly children didn't ask to be born into poverty or with a parent that's maybe disabled or mentally ill, has drug addiction. And we know, I've talked to kids that go to school on Monday and didn't have anything to eat over the weekend. So this is something I'm really passionate about. The fraud is a small percentage of the overall program, but when you're talking about these numbers, even a small percentage is a lot of money.
Well, that's right. And, of course, now with the heroin epidemic, we've had our good friend, Attorney General Mike DeWine on this program talking about the opioid problem in Ohio, the heroin epidemic, and, of course, the many problems that ensue because of that. It does affect families. It affects as parents get involved with drug addiction. And then, of course, it splits up the family and these kids become victims of the after, mass of opiate addiction, and where the neglect is a problem, and sometimes abuse. And so we talked about that with the Attorney General. But here is a program that's being abused because the cards are, you know, that can be transferable. your program and tell the folks about it. You want to put a photo on the card. These are, and let's talk about this, because I think most people don't know. We think back in the day, food stamps was something that was issued, and they actually came as stamps in paper form, and then people would present those at the counter for exchange. How is the program run now, for instance?
Well, it's completely different now, Chris, and what they do is first of the month, they load up an electronic card, just like your ATM card, with a certain number of benefits, and that's done electronically. And then you can go swipe your card in exchange for food at the grocery store. That works wonderfully, but it's just a card. There's no real security devices on it, and what we know is that particularly people in the clutches of addiction, you know, they'll do anything to get their next fix. And so the drug dealers are all too willing to trade the drugs for a discount. So if you've got a card that has a $100 benefit on it, you know, they'll be glad to give you $30 or $40 or maybe $50 worth of drugs in exchange for it. And the problem with that, of course, is our tax money isn't going to pay for the food that we all expect it to. And more problematic, there's a hungry kid at home while mama gets high or dad gets high on the drug fix. The child is going without dinner.
You know, that is so heart-wrenching just to hear that. And we know that that is happening. And, of course, abuses in the program as well. When we know that, you know, everyday Ohioans who work and work hard, and then they watch over every penny and they watch over every dollar in their household and making it stretch. We think of all the good moms and dads out there that make sure that their children are cared for and fed. And but that's not always true. And sometimes in the poorer communities where poverty is rampant and, as you say, then drug addiction through the drug dealers, these people get hooked on drugs, and then the next thing you know, the kids are the ones that are left out. But also the cards themselves are being used as exchange tools. And as you said, law enforcement, when they do a drug bust, and I think the Attorney General, Mike DeWine, corroborated what you're saying in your your claim, is that they have found these cards as part of the stash of, they have the drugs, they have the cash, they have weapons, and then they have these cards. So they are being used as exchange for drugs.
Right. So we want to do just a real simple kind of security. Back when I was young, I'm sure you weren't out of short pants yet, but driver's licenses used to just be a piece of plastic with your name on it and a number, and that was all there was to it. And kids used them, you know, faked those to make fake IDs. And so they put photographs on them so that you at least couldn't exchange the driver's licenses. It doesn't keep fake IDs from happening, of course. We still have that problem, but it makes it a little bit harder, and it tamps down the problem some. So the question I asked the General Assembly, and they've got a bill to do this pending in front of them now, why not put a photograph of the recipient on the face of the card? If I'm a 6'4" man, which I am, I'm going to have a hard time posing as a 5'2" eyes of blue woman.
Yeah, right. No, it's a fantastic idea, and it would go a long way. First of all, the fraud in that program, and right now the Ohio legislature is wrangling over the state budget, which is a constitutional duty of the Ohio legislature every 2 years to present a balanced budget. So they have to look at all the numbers for the various programs, Medicaid, education, the operation of the state agencies, the state itself, the Department of Transportation, all of that in the state budget. And then this program, obviously, $2.5 billion. That is a lot of money. And I'm sure even as, Dr. Carson, when he got to HUD, he is the new appointed Secretary of State. I actually visited the offices of Housing and Urban Development in Washington a couple weeks ago. Our good friend Rich Youngblood is working with Dr. Carson. He is the Faith-Based Community Initiatives Director for Department of HUD, and we were having some good conversation. And the good doctor found millions of dollars in fraud and exploit in the Department of HUD upon his first arrival, actually billions. I think he found several billion dollars in fraud. So this is a worthy cause that you're doing. Now, what kind of receptivity are you getting at the Ohio legislature?
Well, among a lot of the legislators, we're kind of getting what the kids call a face palm, and they're saying, my gosh, that's a great idea. Why didn't we think of that before? And a real enthusiastic reception. But, you know, Chris, down there at the State House, there's some folks whose minds are so open that their brains are leaking out. And so there's a few folks that are against it, if you can believe that. They're afraid that it's going to create some kind of stigma or, it's degrading to the people that are receiving the benefits. I was talking with one lady who, you know, told me I was degrading poor people with this. And I asked her how to explain how putting somebody's photograph on a card is degrading. Ma'am, do you have a driver's license? Do you feel degraded by that? It leaves me scratching my head.
Well, that's right. And again, this is to benefit the program, to make it more solvent so that it will have its intended good. I don't think that this is anything that would derail anyone from using the program. Obviously, if someone doesn't like to have their pictures taken, you know, that there's a question about that. I do see in the one article something about an exemption for religious beliefs. What's that about? What kind of exception is that?
Well, our brothers in the faith in the Amish community feel that it's, as an example, there's other faiths that teach that a photograph is a graven image and it's prohibited by the Ten Commandments. And that's not my understanding of the law, but, I certainly, those of us that support freedom of conscience, Chris,
yes.
We've got to support it all the time and not just in those moments where it's impacting our practice of the faith.
Is there many in the Amish community that are using this program, Auditor?
That is a great question. I don't even know the answer to it.
Yeah. Nevertheless, I think that, you know, an exemption like that could be entertained. Was that language then that was entered into the bill as it was introduced? And what is the bill number on that, by the way?
You know what? I'm blanking on what the bill number is. It's in both the House and the Senate, and there's different numbers. I apologize for not remembering that.
Let's see. Keep changing. Who's the sponsor in the House?
The sponsor in the House is Tim Schaefer.
Okay.
And the Senate, Matt Huffman and Larry Obhoff, the president, are running the legislation.
Oh, very good.
You know Larry well.
I do. And, this is obviously he sees the importance of this. And again, these are people that want to make sure that those who are in need of the services of the program get them. But why on earth would we turn a blind eye to what is obviously, according to law enforcement and the Attorney General's reports, are being used as exchange for drugs, which is the rampant problem right now? Anything to shut that down would be a good thing. I commend you, David. This is a wonderful program, one we as an organization will fully get behind and weigh in on. And in fact, I'm going to a meeting on Saturday where a man is talking more about, on the local level, the networking that's going on with the opiate heroin addictions and what some of the things they're doing as outreaches and counseling and support for those caught up in the addiction. So we're learning all the time, talking to law enforcement, talking to public officials and ministers and community leaders on this problem, because we have to get ahead of it. There's so many multifacets of it, and this would be shutting that down. This would be great.
It would help. But, you know, let's talk about that for a second, because I'm sure you've heard this phrase too, because it seems like every politician says it three or four times a day, and I have to take exception to it. I keep hearing people say we can't arrest our way out of the problem, and that's certainly true at one level. I mean, we can't take every addict and put them in an expensive jail cell. But when you say that, the unspoken idea is, well, we tried that arrest thing, and that just doesn't work, so we should stop doing that and start doing something else. And the fact of the matter is, there's a critical component for law enforcement here. We have to do everything we can to constrict the pipeline. It's true that we're never going to get rid of it. We've been fighting the pipeline for a long time. But there have been times when drugs are cheap and easily available.
Right.
And then there have been times when it's expensive and dangerous to get them. And the distinction of those two times is how many casual people end up in addiction. How many people that otherwise would never have come into contact with that because it's cheap and easy have a friend that introduces it to them to it, or they begin to experiment. We need to make drugs hard to get and expensive, because that means the gateway onto this highway to hell is much narrower and fewer people can fit on it. We need to not cut the legs out from under our law enforcement officers. We need to give them additional tools to go after the purveyors of poison that are dumping this stuff on our streets.
We're talking with State Auditor Dave Yost, who is in his second term as our state auditor, and we're talking about the SNAP program, which is basically the food stamp program in Ohio as it's currently constructed, which basically has a debit card where people can go to any grocery store and point of exchange to get goods and services through the program. But we're talking about adding a photo to the card, which would help to prevent some of the fraud that's going on. And, of course, as these are being exchanged for other services, obviously with drug addiction, but also possibly human trafficking as well in prostitution. So, Auditor, we commend you. This is a great effort that you have. Again, we'll be supporting it. We'll be sharing it with other family groups around Ohio to get behind it. This is something that I think that everybody can rally around saying, hey, this is a good first step. I know that the governor, obviously, he is very concerned about this problem as well, and human trafficking. He's done a lot in his office about that. And, anything that can be of value is used like that in exchange on the street. Those who have nefarious, motives to abuse some of the programs that are in existence, any means possible, unfortunately. And then again, who suffers but the kids who are in poverty, who this program is meant to help and aid? Your thoughts?
I couldn't agree with you more. And it's not just that piece. There's also a monetization. We did an audit and we found that you can do data mining and actually identify the merchants that are making this system work, because somebody at some point has to turn a blind eye and cash out the card.
Yes.
And by using modern data mining techniques, we've demonstrated how you can find out where the anomalies are. You can look at where the spikes are and go after those retailers. So we're encouraging the federal authorities to start thinking that way rather than just being responsive to tip programs. You know, before we go, Chris, I have to tell you how much I appreciate OCA's leadership on the World War II Memorial. And I had never known until you showed it to me that FDR had actually prayed on the radio the day that the D-Day invasion was launched. And I was so touched by that and troubled that that important piece of our heritage and history had been left out of my education, at least. And because of OCA's efforts and Senator Portman and so many people that worked long and hard on getting this done, the authorization got through Congress, and I understand that you're now in the process of trying to bring this thing to life now that it's been authorized. And although I'm going to miss for the first time in 5 years this spring, I've got another commitment. I've got to be, and I'll be with you in spirit. And I hope everyone within the sound of my voice will make an effort to register for the banquet on the 25th support this incredibly important effort to keep our Christian heritage as part of the history of this country.
Well, thank you, David. I very much appreciate that. And of course, your wife, she actually gave me a few years ago a little glass jar with sand in it, and it's from the beaches of Normandy. She was able to go over there with some school-aged children and do a visit to France and to the battlefields of the beaches of Normandy. And her father served in World War II, and she brought that back with a little photo of the cemetery, and I prize that. It's on my shelf, and I think of that often, and just how precious that is. And of course, you know, the price of liberty and those who have given all to defend our liberties throughout the years. And so it's very touching and very precious. And I thank you for the kind thoughts. Thank you so much.
I will tell her you mentioned that.
Well, again, we're excited about this. And, you know, it's one in which you've been a part of as you have supported OCA over the years. And we appreciate all that you're doing. And of course, we'd like to announce to the folks as well, you're intended. I think it's official that you're running for Attorney General in 2018. Is that correct?
That's true. And, you know, I'm a former prosecuting attorney, and as in my time as auditor working in public integrity cases, we've convicted over 130 corrupt public officials of criminal charges. So this is an area that, you know, I really feel passionate about. My heart is in it. And I hope to convince the voters that I'm the right guy to take over that job when Attorney General Mike DeWine is at the end of his term limit in 2018.
Well, thank you again, State Auditor Dave Yost. And you've done a great job as auditor. Many people would commend you on both sides of the aisle for your service to our state in the last 6 years.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, my friend. God bless you.
And you too, Chris. We'll talk soon.
Okay, very good. And that's State Auditor Dave Yost. And of course, stick around because you'll be listening to part two of tonight's broadcast. And we appreciate you joining us. And you can always visit our website for more information. The Ohio Christian Alliance, just Google that or go to ohioca.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment that troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer.
This is how FDR announced to the nation that the liberation of Europe was underway, with the D-Day landings in Normandy 73 years ago. The Ohio Christian Alliance Annual Freedom Banquet is Thursday, May 25th at 7 p.m. at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. Proceeds will benefit the effort to add the D-Day prayer to the World War II Memorial in D.C. Speakers are historian Bill Fetter of the American Minute and Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy. To register, log on to ohioca.org or phone 330-887-1922. That's 330-887-1922.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Okay, and with us on the phone is our good friend Bill Fetter of the American Minute, and he'll be at the Freedom Banquet on the 25th of this month. And you can register again at our website at ohioca.org or just phone 330-887-1922 for tickets. Bill, welcome to the program.
Chris, great to be with you.
Well, as you and I are both very excited about this historical presidential prayer becoming a reality, being added to the World War II Memorial, you, my friend, were very much instrumental in the inspiration of this through the Daily American Minute that you've been basically publicizing for years now of those who have been on your list every day in their inbox they get today in American history or in church history. And it's very fascinating the way that you put the historical facts together. And it just so happened, I think it was something like 9 years ago now, when I was reading the American Minute that day, and it happened to be FDR's prayer. And of course, as a kid, you've heard bits of this. Maybe in the old Anne Frank movie, there was a portion of the prayer and the audio of the president praying when they were all huddled around the radio in the hiding place. And of course, it was the way that the president announced the nation that the liberation of Europe was underway. And so they understood that the D-Day landings were beginning, and they were all very happy about that. But the prayer had basically been lost in time, but you brought it back by way of the American Minute. And then one day back in 2011, when woke up one morning, and of course we have some friends in Congress that were newly elected, and I told my wife, hey, I've got an idea. I'm going to ask Congressman Bill Johnson to offer legislation to add FDR's D-Day prayer in its entirety at the World War II Memorial. And one thing led to another. The congressman said, I'd love to do that. It's fortuitous that you've asked me. I'm serving on some very key committees. And then, of course, later that year in 2012, it did pass both, the Congress, in other words, it passed the House by a vote of 386 to 26. Time ran out in the Senate, so it had to be reintroduced. And Senator Portman was our sponsor in the Senate. Congressman Johnson again reintroduced it in the House. And then, of course, Senator Portman called us with the news that it had passed by unanimous consent. Then, of course, it was concurred on by the House and then signed quietly by President Obama on June 30th of 2014. Well, now working with the U.S. Park Service, Friends of the World War II Memorial, and the Ohio Christian Alliance Ed Fund, we are working for its placement. All the design drafts have been approved by the Fine Arts Commission and the park system, and so we're a go for fundraising because it won't be paid for by tax dollars but by contributions of individuals. That's what the banquet is about coming up on the 25th, just before Memorial Day. If you'd like to join us, please do, because Bill Fetter will be there, and Frank Gaffney, who you just heard on the first part of the program, he'll give a national security briefing, because our people in the military are the ones who have to carry out the missions of defense, defending our republic when we enter into conflict around the world. And that's why we as God's people pray for the peace of this nation and pray for our leaders. Bill, you wrote a book, Prayers and Presidents, Inspiring Faith from the Leaders of the Past. And it's great because it's many of the prayers of the presidents. We had the joy and privilege of being with President Trump last Thursday at the National Day of Prayer in the Rose Garden. And it was the first observance in some years. Mr. Obama did not observe the National Day of Prayer during his watch, but Mr. Trump invited us all back. He was there with Franklin Graham, Ann Graham Lotz, the Dobsons, Tony Perkins, a number of religious leaders were there from across the country. And of course, that was the same day that he signed the Religious Freedom Executive Order, which was a very nice first step, I think, to emphasize that his administration will protect the religious liberties of people of faith. Your thoughts?
Well, Chris, first of all, thank you for spending all that energy and effort to get the D-Day Prayer Act added to the World War II Memorial there in Washington, D.C. Millions of people every year go to that memorial. I've talked to many. I've been on airplanes with when they were taking veterans up to the memorial. My wife has been on airplanes where they've been on there. And we would hear reports that they went through the whole entire memorial and they did not see one reference to God. Now, I had an uncle that I never met that died in a B-17 flying from England across the English Channel over to Holland. And he was an Eagle Scout, right? Back then, it was
right.
Where you pledged you're to do my duty to God and my country. And he was a very moral person. My mom and grandparents missed him for years. They would say prayers. They thought maybe he was captured by the Germans. My grandmother would write letters to the King of England, you know, King George the Fifth. And but I know that he died so that we could have the freedom to pray.
Yes.
He was a godly person. And so to think that they would have a World War II memorial and not one mention of God, and to me, it's heart-wrenching that here they fought Franklin Roosevelt, who was a Democrat,
yes.
Passed out Gideon's New Testaments and Book of Psalms to all the soldiers in World War II. I mean, here's just 70-some-odd years ago, a Democrat president passing out New Testaments to all of the military, brown ones to the Army, blue ones to the Navy. I have a brown one. It's all dog-eared. And you open up to the first page, it's got a dedication by President Franklin D. Roosevelt. He says, "As Commander-in-Chief, I take pleasure in recommending the reading of the Bible to all who serve in the armed forces of the United States." It's been a source of inspiration and so forth, signed Franklin D. Roosevelt. And so we need to remember that this effort to purge our country of its Judeo-Christian faith is a recent phenomenon. And I applaud you and the congressmen and senators that had the courage to actually get this through and pressure the past president to sign it so that we could have God acknowledged in the World War II memorial.
Well, that's right. It's a wonderful prayer. In fact, we're going to have up on our website the audio again in a video that a volunteer put together for us of some of the pictures of the D-Day landings and, of course, the 82nd Airborne as they dropped into Normandy. And the president, he hand-wrote this prayer, and it's 515 words. It's the way in which he announced to the nation that the liberation of Europe was underway. It's all he did was he asked for the nation to pray with him, and you can hear the heart of a president who's deep into war and that his countrymen are dying on battlefields around the world. You know, as you said, Bill, that the memorial is a wonderful tribute to the 16 million Americans that served us in World War II. It was constructed and dedicated in 2004. In fact, a fellow Ohioan, Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, actually was very instrumental in getting the bill through Congress that actually was for the erection of the World War II memorial, and it's a wonderful memorial. In fact, I'm told that it's the most visited memorial in Washington, maybe because you don't have to go through a security checkpoint. You could just walk around and see the different placards. But you're right, there's not a scripture verse, a reference to God, or a prayer anywhere on it. Well, that's what we wanted to rectify. And with this really God-inspired idea, God gave wind to it. And so I remember getting the call from Senator Portman, and he said, Chris, I'd like to introduce that bill for you in the Senate, after Congressman Johnson introduced it in the House. And so the Lord was with this thing. It's gotten great bipartisan support. In fact, the Fine Arts Commission, that were basically all President Obama appointees, were very supportive and actually looking over the designs to make sure that it gets the prominence that it deserves. The placement is going to be the Circle Remembrance just beyond the Atlantic Arch, a $600,000 enhancement to the area with marble stone that matches that of the memorial, and then four large bronze plaques with the entire prayer with inch and a half size type. So it will be very legible and a wonderful addition to the memorial. And of course, they're very excited about it. I'm told even that the grandson of FDR, who serves on the Friends of the World War II committee, is thrilled. The family's thrilled. I didn't have any contact with former President FDR's family during this time, but we're glad that they're thrilled. But it really is for the people and for the veterans of all generations, because it speaks a tribute to those men and women who service in battlefields around the world. Now, also, they want to talk about maybe adding the names of the cemeteries of all the soldiers and sailors that did not come home, and adding the names of those cemeteries, both in the Pacific and the Atlantic, to what's called the Circle Remembrance around this prayer. I think that would be a nice addition. They're working on that. So it's going to be a very moving experience, and we hope that we can see this through. Of course, it won't be paid for by tax dollars, but by private contributions from individuals. In fact, even George Fowler, who is 93 years old and gave testimony 6 years ago, he called me just last month. He says, "Hey, how are we coming with that?" He said, "I want to stick around for this dedication." I said, "Well, George, you hang in there. If all goes well, it'll be June of 2018. So I hope he's around for its dedication. It's, George Poppy Fowler was a Navyman that flew off the aircraft carriers in the Pacific during the war. But thank you, Bill, and we hope to again almost a year from now, 13 months from now, hopefully it's dedication if all goes well.
Well, I believe it will, and again, I want to let the listeners know that this is a volunteer funding for this project, and that they can be a part of it by visiting the website that you have. When did you get that address again?
That's the Ohio Christian Alliance website, and the contribution is tax deductible, given to the OCA Ed Fund or Ohio Christian Alliance Ed Fund. In fact, you'll see as you go to the contribution link that it says Prayer Project. Just click on that link, make your contribution. It's fully tax deductible, and every dollar will help us as we are raising the money. Now, from our standpoint, we're trying to raise at least $300,000 of the $600,000 needed. The Friends of the World War II Memorial are going through their contacts to do the same, and that will pay for its construction. So these monies will go for that purpose. And so when you visit Washington, you see this prayer, you said, "Hey, I contributed to that and helped it get placed." And that's how it gets done. You know, a lot of the memorials and monuments in Washington were not paid for by tax dollars. In fact, the George Washington Memorial itself was private contributions. It took a number of years. In fact, if you look halfway up, you can see the difference in the granite stone, but where the construction paused at a certain point before they continued. The Smithsonian Institute, the castle there, was privately donated, and so on. In fact, the World War II Memorial itself was private donations, $172 million from veterans all across the country. In fact, Bob Dole gave $16 million of his own money that he was able to raise for the memorial. So that's how it gets done in Washington, folks. It's not tax dollars. Don't count on that. It's our contributions, and we want you to participate and take some ownership of this. It'd be a great pride for you and your children and those who have served in our armed forces in your family as well. Well, Bill, let's talk about prayers and presidents. This is part of our legacy from the beginning of our start as a nation, with Reverend Duché's prayer before Congress and every state legislature and before Congress. That prayer continues, and we need to keep the home fires burning of God's people praying.
Well, you know, during the colonial time, many states had annual days of fasting and prayer, usually on Good Friday, like the state of New Hampshire. Matter of fact, they were voting on whether or not to ratify the U.S. Constitution because it needed 9 states and there were only 8. And New Hampshire was in a deadlock, so the governor of New Hampshire, John Langdon, postpones the ratifying convention, and they have a day of fasting and prayer. They get back together. They hear a sermon from the Harvard president on the Republic of the Israelites, an example to the American states. They vote and to ratify. They're the 9th state. The U.S. Constitution goes into effect.
Oh my.
After New Hampshire had a day of fasting. This is part of our heritage. Woodrow Wilson had a day of fasting and prayer when we entered World War I. John Adams had a day of fasting and prayer in 1798 during a threatened war with France. James Madison had a day of fasting and prayer after the British burnt the White House. It's like, okay, God, you got our attention, burning the White House here. Zachary Taylor had a day of fasting and prayer in 1849 when there was a cholera epidemic and 150,000 Americans died of cholera. Mm. Matter of fact, Ohio had to postpone its first state fair because of cholera. 8,000 died in Cincinnati and the different cities in Ohio. The mayor of Dayton, Ohio, closed all the stores, and everyone knelt openly in the street and prayed. And that was 1849, and the president, Zachary Taylor, had a day of fasting and prayer. And then the death rates drop off. What a answer to prayer there. And we go through, before the Civil War, President James Buchanan had a day of fasting and prayer. Twice during the Civil War, Lincoln had a day of fasting and prayer. And then, of course, he made the Day of Thanksgiving an annual event. And we could go all the way up through the 1800s. And it was Truman that made the National Day of Prayer an annual event. And then, of course, it was Ronald Reagan that made it the first Thursday in May. But this is our heritage. And it's been a very recent attempt to erase it. There's actually a communist tactic called deconstruction, where you separate a people from their past, get them into a neutral where they do not remember where they came from, and then you can brainwash them into the future you have planned for them. Sort of a sales technique. If I was a toothpaste salesman, the first thing I would do is say negative things about the toothpaste you're currently using. You're still using that old stuff. It'll eat the enamel off your teeth. Ooh, you're repulsed by it. Now I got you into the neutral. You're sort of open-minded. What are all the toothpastes out there nowadays? And then I can give you my pitch for this tartar control breath freshener stuff. And so they go into the classrooms and they tell kids negative things about the founders of the country. Oh, they owned slaves, took land from slave owners and so forth, took land from Indians. And then the kids are repulsed by them. And then the kids get into a neutral and they're sort of open-minded. And then you can give them your pitch for LGBT or Islam or whatever other agenda you have. And so we see this has been applied culturally. And we're well into this, where we've gone through a generation now where we've not taught this history, and we have an uneducated populace, and now we're being brought into a secular and even Islamic worldview, and with all the loss of freedoms that that entails.
Well, that's very frightening, and we just had Frank Gaffney on. Of course, he's doing a lot of work on the Islamist basically intervention into our government and over the last number of years through the Muslim Brotherhood in all levels of government. And during President Obama's administration, they were in the Pentagon, they were in the CIA, they were in Homeland Security. And these were dubious individuals that were in every facet of government. And the new administration is putting their people in place, but they're being fought with every day, and that's why we need to continue to pray, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, we're in a spiritual war for our country. We've got a president that is giving deference to evangelicals, to Christian leaders, and basically those who have been persecuted over the last number of years. The Little Sisters of the Poor were featured last Thursday at the White House. The president said it should not be happening in our country, but it did, against their statement of faith that government policies was forcing them to basically do that which is against their statement of faith. And like you said, Bill, our young people, they're being brainwashed into the schools and basically eradicating their foundation of who we are as the American Republic, and to replace it with Islamist sympathies and, of course, LGBT, philosophy of life and gender neutral, this kind of thing. And only one has to guess as to where we're going as a nation if we continue this moral drift. That's why, folks, we need to be praying. We need to be interceding for our country. A call to prayer has gone out. I was reading in Ezekiel when God says, when I set the watchman on the wall and he gives warning, if the people take warning. But if they don't take warning, it's not the watchman's fault. It's, then that the people lose their liberty and their life, not because the watchman didn't alarm. But if the watchman doesn't send the alarm, then, the watchman is accountable. Well, we're on the watch, as it were. And what better way than to pray and intercede? That's why we were in Washington last week, for first and foremost, to pray for our leaders and to intercede. I had the opportunity to pray and actually read the Bible on Capitol Hill. But I got to say, Bill, Bowl, there was only a very few people that were participating. And there was maybe a church that came out on the National Day of Prayer. They had about 500 in attendance. Wonderful people. Sometimes it doesn't take a lot, does it? But it takes intent prayer, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And, you know, I want to remind the listeners of Franklin Roosevelt. I actually wrote a book of all of his quotes. He said, "The whole world is divided between pagan brutality and the Christian ideal. We choose human freedom, which is the Christian ideal." Franklin Roosevelt said again, "Churches and government can work hand in hand. Government can ask the churches to stretch the social justice, while at the same time, government guarantees to churches, Gentile and Jewish, the right to worship God in their own way. State and church are rightly united in a common aim." That's an interesting quote there. Here's Franklin Roosevelt, 1942. "The world is too small for both Hitler and God. Nazis have announced their plan of enforcing their pagan religion all over the world, by which the Bible and the Cross of Mercy would be displaced by Mein Kampf and the swastika." Another quote from Franklin Roosevelt, 1940. "Those forces hate democracy and Christianity. They oppose democracy because it is Christian. They oppose Christianity because it preaches democracy." That's something you wouldn't hear too often today. Then he went to Yalta, and after the conference, Roosevelt said, "I saw Sevastopol in Yalta, and I know there is not room enough on earth for both German militarism and Christian decency."
Mm.
And then this, he says, "I hope you've reread the Constitution. Like the Bible, it ought to be read again and again." So here you have a Democrat president, Franklin Roosevelt, saying, read your Bible again and again. And then in 1942, Roosevelt says, "This great war effort shall not be imperiled by a handful of noisy traitors, betrayers of America, betrayers of Christianity itself." Then he goes on to say, "Your government is working with representatives of Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish faiths. Without these three, all three of them, things would not be as easy." Notice it's just Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish. It doesn't have Islam in there. These are all quotes from Franklin Roosevelt from the book that I put together called The Faith of FDR. And it's important for us to remember this heritage, not just in print, which I have done, but also in stone, which you have done and are working on.
Yes.
And the listeners can have a part in having it be remembered in stone. And so by donating to your website, give that site again.
That's the Ohio Christian Alliance website, and you'll be giving a tax-deductible contribution to the OCA Ed Fund, and then just click on Prayer Project when you get to the link, and then that contribution will go for the construction and the placement of the prayer at the World War II Memorial. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Bill Fetter from the American Minute. Don't go away.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment that troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer.
This is how FDR announced to the nation that the liberation of Europe was underway with the D-Day landings in Normandy 73 years ago. The Ohio Christian Alliance Annual Freedom Banquet is Thursday, May 25th at 7 p.m. at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. Proceeds will benefit the effort to add the D-Day prayer to the World War II Memorial in D.C. Speakers are historian Bill Fetter of the American Minute and Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy. To register, log on to ohioca.org or phone 330-887-1922. That's 330-887-1922.
And we're back with Bill Fetter of the American Minute. And, of course, we're talking about his book, Prayers and Presidents. And Bill will be speaking at the Freedom Banquet, and he'll have many of his books. In fact, he'd like to autograph them for you. And, you know, these are real treasures, folks. He has written many books over the years, What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, Prayers and Presidents, American God and Country, an Encyclopedia of Quotations, so many more that Bill has written over the years, and ones in which you can give gifts also to your children and help them. Bill, give us the website where people can go and get the American Minute every day, and also look at some of your research and books to purchase.
Well, thank you, Chris. My website is AmericanMinute.com. That's AmericanMinute.com. And I send out a free daily history email. Another quote from Franklin Roosevelt, 1941. This is Labor Day. He says, "Preservation of our rights is vitally important now, not only to us who enjoy them, but to the whole future of Christian civilization." Sounds similar to Winston Churchill talking about defending Christian civilization.
Yes.
But here we have an effort to remember our Judeo-Christian faith on stone there in the Washington, D.C., right at the monument. It's been ignored for all of this time, and you, the listener, have an opportunity to add your contribution to this great project to have the monument be there as a testimony. It's just Franklin Roosevelt's prayer where he mentions God.
Yes.
And thank you so much, Chris.
Well, thank you, Bill, and we're looking forward to having you on the 25th for our annual Spring Freedom Banquet. And again, folks, you can register for the banquet. Frank Gaffney will be with us, Bill Fetter, other special guests, and you won't want to miss it. Well, Bill, thanks for being my guest today, and we'll see you on the 25th, my friend.
Thank you, Chris.
God bless you. And, of course, folks, you can also see the prayer on our website, the entire prayer, and we'll have the video up there later as well. And, again, that's at ohioca.org. Thanks for listening, and tell a friend about the broadcast. God bless you. Good night.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.